morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Terry Barber. I represent Mr. Brown, who is the appellant in this case. I appreciate your time this morning. We're asking the court in this case to find that whereas here a trial court not only weighs in the balance what a child's wishes are with respect to parenting time, but completely foregoes bringing those considerations into the mix in any attempts that are made to interject the child's preferences, that and in essence dismissing them out of hand, that it's error and that error is considerable enough to require reversal of the determination. This youngster, who I will call Jay, was born in 2001 to Ms. Shemmick and Mr. Brown. They lived together as a family until the fall of 2012, when they went their separate ways. At the time that they were separated, Jay was 11. By the spring of 2013, the case was filed in January of 13. In the spring of 13, Mr. Brown was diagnosed with lung cancer. By that time, Jay was 12 years old. By the time of trial, he was 13, and as we stand here today, he's 14 years old. This arises out of the trial court's decision in this case awarding custody of Jay to his mother, Ms. Shemmick. That order was entered in July of 2014. The core of the criticism in this case relates to several simple facts that appear in the record. First of all, in January of 2014, Mr. Brown made a motion in this case to have the trial court interview Jay. There had been some challenges with him, and it seemed that it was high time to, on the record, make this request. The request was made by motion in late February. The motion was denied. Several months before, a guardian ad litem had been appointed for Jay, but there had been no attempts to really work with Jay to find out what his wishes, what his desires and thoughts were about parenting time, nor was it what was at the root of difficulties that were ongoing.
Counsel, do I understand that the trial court took the position that the guardian ad litem should be the one speaking for the child?
I believe that's a fair statement, yes.
And it became apparent at some point that the guardian ad litem hadn't even talked to the child about some of these things. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I believe that was a concern, and that was obvious by the time the trial took place in July. The guardian had prepared his chief report and also a supplemental or an addendum to his report. Those were exhibits 11 and 12.
But those exhibits don't really show that he specifically questioned Jay about where he wanted to live or how his relationship was with his parents in any great detail, did he?
Well, certainly not in great detail. It's difficult to find in those two exhibits where he even flew the plane anywhere in the same time zone as those questions. It was not only a matter of not having evaluated, but not having even in light of all of the difficulties that were ongoing, to not investigate, to not put the time into it necessary to really find out what was going on, to, if need be, get some professional help to try to home in on what was going on and what the preferences were and why, whether this youngster was of an age that his thinking should be considered.
After the reports came in, did you renew your motion asking the court to interview this child?
During the trial, during Mr. Brown's testimony, he testified, I believe, in July, he renewed the request on the record as he testified and explained that in his thinking it was important that Jay be interviewed, that the matter of his wishes be investigated and considered.
Was that before or after the reports had come in from the GAL?
I believe it was after the reports had come in.
Thank you.
And in addition, then Mr. Brown also called a good friend and a longtime co-worker, Jeanette Williams. And Ms. Williams had some testimony from some of her, the time that she had spent with Jay during the late summer, early fall of 2013, in which she indicated and iterated to the court the interest and angst Jay was having in terms of his desire to want to be interviewed, to want to talk to the judge in particular about what was going on with him and what his preferences were. Against that background of the motion in January of 2014, the renewal of the request during the trial, and the evidence that was put on indicating that there was indeed something that needed to be investigated, we base the request that we're making in this case and the error that we claim occurred on the Supreme Court's decision in Sullivan, which was a 1996 case. I don't find that at any time in the intervening 19 years that Sullivan has been criticized in the least. And we look to Sullivan for the proposition that a youngster's wishes regarding parenting time and custody shouldn't be disregarded. Now, I realize that in Sullivan, the case didn't turn on that issue. That's not why the decision was reversed. The statement was clearly dictum. I think as a matter of both policy and law, the proposition is sound and ought to be the law of Nebraska, if in fact it is not. The Sullivan court said that children are entitled to a stable home, that they're not chattels and shouldn't be made the subject of an ongoing contest between their parents. In a particular note, the young lady's name in Sullivan was Amber, and she testified that she wished to remain with her mother. And what the court said is, although Amber's wishes are not controlling, they shouldn't be disregarded. And in this case, we think that's what happened, and we think that that's a basis to, in and of itself, to reverse this matter and send it back for reevaluation, for determination of where Jay stands and why he stands there and whether he's of a suitable age to have some involvement in the decision-making process. And we realize that under the Supreme Court's decision in Watkins, matters of custody and parenting time are to be reviewed de novo on the record, but ordinarily, unless there's an abuse of discretion, the trial court's decision is allowed to stand. I think in this case, as a matter of justice and conscience and common sense for that matter, what occurred here to not just disregard what his desires were, but to not even look into them, not even make them part of the mix, amounts to an abuse of discretion that would justify reversal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I am Gregory Barton, appearing on behalf of the appellee, Ms. Shemek. As we know, this is a paternity case that arose in early 2013. And as we also know, this case is subject to the deferential abuse of discretion standard of review. Given the what we consider to be veritable mountain of evidence on the custody and parenting time issues that were presented to the district court, we think this case practically argues itself in support of the district court's decision to place the party's minor child in the sole legal and physical custody of Ms. Schimmick, subject to a detailed and reasonable parenting time schedule for Mr. Brown. In short, there is no legal or factual basis for reversal of Judge Ott's decision. Now, my focus today is primarily on the custody and parenting time rulings of the district court, although, as we know, Mr. Brown has chosen to throw in everything but the kitchen sink into this appeal. Although the only issues being argued by Mr. Barber this morning is the issue of whether the child's alleged desires and wishes regarding custody and parenting time were disregarded by the district court. They were not disregarded.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but do you agree just with the general proposition that the court has an obligation to consider the wishes of the child?
I think the statute is mandatory. It says courts shall consider under the Parenting Act, specifically Section 43, 2923, subparagraph B, subparagraph 6, says one of the factors the court shall consider, which to me is mandatory language, is the desires and wishes of a minor child if it's sufficiently mature, to short-circuit the statutory language a little bit. However, the statute does not say that those wishes and preferences of a child can only be presented to the district court through the testimony of the child. The statute says nothing about how those desires and wishes can be presented for a district court's consideration.
Do you think they were presented in this case?
I'm sorry, Judge?
Do you think they were presented in this case?
I believe they certainly were.
And where did they come from?
It came from two separate interviews by the court-appointed guardian ad litem, Mr. London. He, as indicated in Exhibit 11, he interviewed the child, I believe it was in late October of 2013, for at least an hour. And it's specifically, I think it's pages 11 and 12 of Exhibit 11, where Mr. London's report details everything that the minor child was saying about what his mother was supposedly, quote-unquote, mean to him, and how he wanted to be with his dad. And Mr. London had a follow-up interview with the child in, I believe it was June of 2014, shortly before the trial. And Mr. London also reported in that report, Exhibit 12, that he knows that the minor child wants things to go back to the way they were, where he could see mom and dad equally, because that was the original 7-day-on, 7-day-off schedule that Judge Ott imposed on our cross motions for temporary custody back in March of 2013. That was in the reports. That was in the reports that were received in evidence. At the conclusion of our case in chief, Mr. London was called to testify. And the judge specifically asked him, has anything that's occurred through the trial, I believe it was at the conclusion of the entire case, but had changed his opinion or in any way affected his reports? And he said no. Mr. Barber had a full opportunity to cross-examine Mr. London while he was sitting right there in the courtroom about anything about the minor child's desires and wishes and preferences regarding custody and parenting time. That didn't happen. The evidence showed, by Mr. Brown's own admissions, that he repeatedly, flagrantly, disregarded Judge Ott's temporary custody and parenting time orders, to the point when everything came to a head in January of 2014, Mr. Brown's parenting time was completely suspended. When I cross-examined Mr. Brown, I know that's why you defer to the court on credibility issues, the court below, but it's one of those you kind of had to be there things. Because when I was cross-examining him and he was admitting all of these knowing and intentional violations of the district court's orders, he was doing it with almost some sort of a perverse pride. Melanie's the only parent below who was trying to facilitate an orderly custody and parenting time relationship for both of the parties. And this was a case, one of the most frustrating in my 26 plus years of practice, because I had to engage in so much motion practice to try to rein in Mr. Brown and his conduct of just completely depriving Ms. Shemek of contact with her son. The same kid for whom she was the primary care provider for his whole life. And she still is. And the evidence showed what an excellent job she does in that regard.
Going back to the GAL's report, so do we have conflicting desires of the child? I think you said at one point the report indicates that his mother was mean and he wanted to be with his mom, but in the next report he wanted to do 1 week on, 1 week off, the same as he had done in the past.
I believe Mr. London's exact language in the supplemental GAL report was he knew that the son wanted things to go back to the way they were. And I interpret that, Your Honor, as the 7 day on, 7 day off, because the evidence at trial from both parties was that after they separated, or about the time they separated in September of 2012, they had an informal agreement at that point to do a 7 day on, 7 day off parenting time schedule. But as the evidence at trial showed, Mr. Brown refused to comply with that, which is what led to the filing of the case and the cross motions for temporary custody, which Judge Ott essentially denied both parties and said, I'm going to make formal your informal prior agreement. And so as of, I believe, the end of March of 2013, the 7 day on, 7 day off temporary parenting time schedule was formalized by Judge Ott's order at that point. And then I think, as Exhibit 2 would show you, because that's the hard copy printout of the district court's electronic docket for this case, it was right after that I started having to file motion after motion after motion, because Mr. Brown absolutely refused to follow that 7 day on, 7 day off schedule. I had to get a number of remedial orders from Judge Ott to try to get makeup time for Ms. Shemek, which I got, and it got to the point where in October of 2013, Judge Ott modified the temporary custody and parenting time, placed the child in the sole temporary legal and physical custody of my client, subject to parenting time, as she determined. Well, what did she determine? She proposed a standard in Lancaster County 10-4 parenting time schedule, which Mr. Brown just decided after that, as he testified with full knowledge of that new temporary order, he was just going to unilaterally reimpose a 7 day on, 7 day off schedule. And I would submit that a parent's flagrant disregard of a court's lawful orders is a significant factor to be considered in a custody and parenting time case. I'd also point out, Your Honors, a couple of things. One, at the time that Mr. Barber was requesting the court interview the child, he did not make any offer of proof as to what the child might say. And two, there's no evidence that the child, that Mr. Barber did anything to secure the child's presence in the courthouse, much less the courtroom, during either trial day. So one wonders how the court would have interviewed that child if he was not present on either day of trial. For all of these reasons, I respectfully request that you affirm the district court in all respects.
Counsel, our record doesn't show whether or not the child was there, does it?
There's no record of who's sitting in the courtroom.
Right.
That's true, Judge. I went back and looked at Exhibit 2 for the umpteenth time, and there was no subpoena issued to have the child appear on either the June trial date or the second July trial date. That much is reflected by the documents in the record.
And he certainly was not called as a witness.
That's true. And no, well, it's not of a record, so I'll just bite my tongue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time does Mr. Barber have left?
Good, I don't have much to say. Just two things. I think just the fact that the reports are unclear and take some deciphering is an indication that the job of investigating and really determining, looking into the way it should have been done as to Jay's interests, his reasoning skills, and his preferences indicate that the job wasn't complete. I think with respect to all of the business about the difficulties that supposedly amounted to Mr. Brown's flagrant disregard for the trial court's orders, I think Mr. Brown explained those in some detail during his testimony at trial to be more, by far, a matter of him refusing to turn away his son when he ran back to him, that that was the overriding consideration. So for all the reasons, including the statute, we're asking that the trial court's decision be reversed. Thanks.
Thank you. Case is submitted. Counsel, you're free to go.
Thank you.